This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Florida's Democratic gubernatorial candidates held their fourth debate Wednesday night at Florida Gulf Coast University. Last night's debate marked the first to include all five frontrunners in the race and covered a broad range of topics, from South Florida's ongoing algae bloom crisis to public education funding, school safety, medical marijuana, affordable housing, and more. Whoever wins the August 28th primary will go on to face the Republican nominee in the November general election. On today's show, we'll hear the candidates' responses and positions as we listen back to Wednesday night's debate in its entirety.
Good evening, and welcome to the Wink News gubernatorial debate. I'm Lois Tomey.
I'm Chris Safadi. We're live tonight from the Cohen Center at FGCU. We're glad you're here with us. The candidates' placement on stage and the order of the questions tonight were predetermined in a random drawing just a few minutes ago, right before they took the stage.
The rules are simple. Each candidate will have 1 minute for opening and closing statements. Each candidate will also have 1 minute to respond to questions.
If a candidate is mentioned by name, they may take 30 seconds to rebut. But when time is up, we'll all hear this sound. Right on cue.
Two things to note as we begin. The Republican Party of Florida rejected our offer to host a debate between those candidates for governor.
And we have a full house here. We've asked the audience here to hold their applause until the end so we can get through as many questions in the next hour as possible.
And with that, let's begin. The first opening statement goes to Gwen Graham.
Thank you so much. And thank you to the Florida Democratic Party, all here in the audience, watching at home, and to Florida Gulf Coast University for hosting this debate. Florida, this is not a drill. After 20 years of Republican rule in Tallahassee, our public schools are being starved. Our lakes and rivers are cloaked with algae. And a woman's right to choose is on the line. Now, you may notice I look a little different than my other friends up here on stage. I'm a mom, former PTA president, public school official, and I served Florida in Congress. And it is these life experiences that make me uniquely qualified to be the next governor of Florida. This is not a drill. If you are ready to end 20 years of Republican rule in our state capital, I am ready to lead. Let's get it done.
Mr. King.
Good evening. President Martin, Florida Gulf Coast University, what the rest of the world has called Dunk City. The Democrats are in the House, and we are so honored to be here. I'm Chris King. And today in Florida, we've got some big challenges. But we're not solving them, not for lack of solutions, but I would argue for an absence of political courage. Take the affordable housing crisis. Conventional politicians in Tallahassee have raided $2 billion from our trust fund these last 20 years. Take everyday gun violence. Conventional politicians in Tallahassee have not stood up to the NRA to solve and pass basic common sense measures. Take the toxic algae blooms right now poisoning both of our coasts. Huge, huge problem. And nobody in either party has stood up to Big Sugar and done what needs to be done to fix this problem once and for all. My candidacy is about doing hard things and for the pursuit of the common good. And I look forward to serving you.
Mr. Gillum.
Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Andrew Gillum, and although I am the mayor of Florida's capital city in Tallahassee, Florida, I'm actually from the bottom of the state. I grew up in an area called Richmond Heights in Miami-Dade, and don't let the word Richmond fool you. It wasn't very rich, but it was certainly at the bottom of this state. I grew up to my mother, Frances, who was a school bus driver, and my daddy, Charles, who was a construction worker. I'm number five of seven kids and the first of my siblings to graduate from high school and the first to graduate from college. You can't tell anybody in our family that we don't know what it means to see intergenerational poverty interrupted at the hands of a good public education. And I'm on this stage running for anybody who has ever been told that they don't belong, that they don't come from the right family, don't have a deep enough bank account. I'm here for those of us who are living the everyday experience trying to learn to survive and thrive in this state. And it is my condition that we deserve a seat at the table, too. With your help, we'll get there.
Mr. Green.
Good evening. I grew up middle class in Massachusetts. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and my dad was a very successful businessman. Unfortunately, in the late 1960s, the textile mills all folded in New England, and my dad lost everything. We moved to West Palm Beach, and just to make ends meet, my mom had to take a job as a waitress at the Breakers Hotel. My dad got a vending route, filling vending machines. I'll never forget seeing the looks in their eyes night after night when they came home from grueling hard days of work, and I was thinking, how could this have happened to our family? How could this have happened to our family? Thanks to a great public education, I was able to get into Johns Hopkins University, got scholarships, student loans, had three jobs, got into Harvard Business School, and you know what? I've had an amazing life. But you know what? I've had to fight for every single thing in my life, and I can tell you, every single day when I wake up, I never forget where I came from and how I got here. I will fight for Florida families if you make me your governor. I promise you that.
Mr. Levine.
Thank you, Florida Gulf Coast University. I'm Philip Levine. I'm the former mayor of Miami Beach. I grew up the son of a single mother. I am a proud product of the Florida public school system. As a matter of fact, I'm the second person in my entire family to graduate college. With $500, I started a little business that grew. Then I decided to run for mayor, and I became a two-term mayor because I wanted to help my community. I'm running for governor because I want to see everyone in Florida be able to live the American dream the way I did. And today it's impossible. Unfortunately, the odds are stacked against us. It's not a level playing field. We have these algae blooms and environmental issues and a sea that's rising all over the state. We have a minimum living wage, which is way too low to live on. Many folks in Florida, 1.6 million, don't have health insurance. I have a baby boy, two additional children. I'm running so that they have a shot at the Florida and the American dream. I'm running for governor so that everybody in Florida can have a shot at the American dream. Thank you.
Our first couple of questions tonight, we'll ask each of you the same question, then we'll vary it up a little bit. So we'll start with Mr. King on this one. What do you plan to do on day one to combat the nutrient runoff and the brown water and the nutrients contributing to the algae in our water?
Well, this is an enormous issue for the state of Florida. And it's one we have seen over and over and over again. You know, I have been the first voice in a generation that says if you care about clean water, if you care about toxic discharges, if you care about the Everglades restoration, and you're not willing to show the political courage to stand up to the industry that has had a vice grip on environmental politics in the state of Florida for 20 years, paying off politicians all throughout the state of Florida, you're not willing to hold this office. It's why I took a position not to take sugar money in my campaign and why I said I won't be beholden when it comes to Florida's environment. Because what we have to do is we have got to build a water treatment reservoir and storage facility south of the lake. We've got to do it fast because our estuaries on the east and west side of the state are hurting, and we're going to continue to pollute them until we do politics differently in the Sunshine State.
Thank you. Mr. Gillum.
Yeah, I mean, so first thing you'll get with me is a governor who actually believes in science. Rick Scott says he's not a scientist, not that any of us are surprised by that, but he uses it as an excuse to do nothing. And so what do we have today? We've got algae blooms of guacamole content flowing out of the east and the west side of this state. When I'm elected governor, we're going to work with the sugar industry to reestablish the southern flow of water into the Everglades before we kill off that very valuable system in this state. But we're also going to have some tough conversations with communities north of Lake Okeechobee around the kind of development that's happening north of the lake. Those local governments, too many of them, are too eager to bring in any development at any cost. And those nitrate levels are flowing into our groundwater, corroding the system, and resulting in the kind of degradation of our environment that we see today. You'll have a governor who not only believes in science, but is willing to stand up to the big interests and make sure that we take care of our environment and our people first.
Mr. Green.
You know, I had the opportunity to visit Lake Okeechobee just last week, and I have to tell you something. It's worse in person than it is on television. It is disgusting. And the craziest thing about it is we already have a solution. I've been supporting the Everglades Foundation for years, so I'm familiar with this whole issue. We already have the reservoir. We have reservoir land south of the lake. The only problem is our governor has not funded the plumbing to push the water into that reservoir. So instead, we're just sending it out to the estuaries. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, the water is going to be the issue of our time. It's not just the Lake Okeechobee; it's everywhere. And we have to clean up the lake. But let me tell the other thing we have to do: we have to stop the septic systems that are leaking all around the lake. This is the problem. It's Big Sugar's one problem. It's septic systems, Big Sugar. And the development, all those homes, like Andrew said, with the sod lawns and the fertilizer that have been going into this lake. So we have some work to do. When I get to Tallahassee, I'm going to address it the first day I get there.
Mr. Levine.
Thank you. Well, being the former mayor of Miami Beach, I know a little about working with water, okay? Some people get swept into office. I kind of got floated into office in Miami Beach dealing with sea level rise. We spent a lot of time on the east and the west and visiting Lake Okeechobee and understanding the problem. But we have a short-term solution. We have a long-term solution. Short-term, one of the most important things we can do, folks, is we need to make sure those water management boards are no longer filled with Rick Scott cronies, that we actually put scientists, community leaders, ecologists, environmentalists who understand what a water management board is supposed to do. That's a quick thing we need to do. Number two, we need to begin monitoring the water again. Rick Scott took away all the monitoring systems by defunding the Department of Environmental Protection, which, by the way, under his administration, should be called the Department of Environmental Exploitation, because that's what they have done. Yes, we need the reservoir to the south, but we need to start doing things now. We need to regulate the amount of nutrients that are going into that lake, and by golly, we need to get started. Thank you.
Ms. Graham.
Actually, DEP stands for currently the Department of Environmental Pollution. Yeah. And that's going to change when I'm governor. We need to have a comprehensive plan to deal with this extremely difficult issue that has resulted in 20 years of Republican rule. This is another example, another sickness that 20 years of Republican rule has created. So we have to deal with septic tanks. We have to deal with nutrient runoff. We have to make sure that indeed we have people on our water management districts that actually understand the question of water quality and water quantity, because the future of Florida is at stake. We have to stop talking about Everglades restoration and actually get it done. So though the Negron plan is a good step, it is not nearly enough. We have to have a much broader, much shallower reservoir south of the lake in order to actually filtrate the water. The Everglades is the beating heart of our environment. We've got to heal the Everglades, and we've got to move to make sure that water quality and quantity in this state is protected. Water equals life.
Our next question will go to all of the candidates, beginning with Mr. Gillum. Have you or any PACs associated with your campaign accepted donations from Big Sugar, and would you accept any in the future?
Well, I will tell you, I have absolutely not accepted any money from Big Sugar. And that's what I can speak on today, because that's what I get to control. And I will tell you, when you elect me governor of the state of Florida, what we're going to do is make sure that we put the interests of everyday people first. I will tell you, I am not accepting money from Big Sugar, but I have also said that we've got to deal with the 50,000 citizens who are surrounding that industry, many of them communities of color, who are not being talked to about the kind of job industry that we're going to usher into their area once we transform the agricultural use around it. We can't have this conversation in the elite towers of liberalism. We have to have these conversations with everyday people whose lives are dependent on making sure that they can get a job and earn a wage and get access to health care and get retirement. We've got to make sure that we give those people a new deal around how it is that they're going to live their lives out once we transform Sugar and make them a better corporate citizen in this state.
Mr. Green.
I will take no money from any Sugar PAC or any PAC or any special interest group. I'm going to have one special interest group when I'm the governor of Florida, and it's going to be you, the people of Florida. And I can tell you that the problem we have in Florida is we have a culture of corruption and bribery in Tallahassee. I mean, basically, almost every one of our elected officials is bought and paid for, and the day they get there, they have obligations to all of these special interest groups and PACs. And one thing about me is I'm not going to have any of that. So I promise you I will not take a penny from not only Big Sugar, but any PAC. So when it comes to guns, when it comes to gun violence, I'm only going to be worried about you, the people of Florida.
Thank you.
Mr. Levine.
Well, I can tell you that I'm definitely not taking sugar money, and we're not taking NRA money, but after I got my latest F from them, I don't think they're going to give me any, okay? We're not taking money from any of the power companies. But I think the bottom line is, and I want to just kind of reflect, we do have a culture of corruption. It's legal corruption. I mean, think what's going on in Tallahassee right now. You have these folks all of a sudden that are born again folks that love charter schools. They just can't get enough of them all of a sudden because we know why. The charter school's giving money to this one's brother who's a lawyer and this one's a consultant and this one. And by the way, all of a sudden they love charter schools when our public schools are being starved. So if you watch the money, you'll understand what's going on because let's face people, he who pays the piper picks the tunes. And I can tell you, if I'm honored to be governor, it's not going to happen to the administration. Same way when I was the two-term mayor of Miami Beach, we're just going to get things done for the people of Florida. That's why I am running for governor of our great state. Thank you.
Ms. Graham.
Thank you. No and no. And I know that the Big Sugar is watching this very carefully because they know that change is coming. Because the next governor of Florida, they know with me, they get someone who's going to stand up to them and who's going to fight to make sure that we do what we need to do. So, yes, we are going to have to obtain the land south of Lake Okeechobee. Right now, we don't have enough. We have to be able to have more of that Everglades agricultural area to make sure that we have a wide enough piece of land that's shallow enough to actually provide filtration for the water that's coming through. That's what we have to do biologically. That's what has to happen. So those that are currently farming sugar crops south of Lake Okeechobee, I'm going to work to make sure that we can swap out land in other places that does not affect our environment here in Florida and make sure that we provide skill sets training for the new jobs that when I'm governor, we're going to be bringing to the state of Florida.
Mr. King.
Yes. You know, I've made this a cornerstone of my campaign because we could run this record every year of what conventional politicians say about how we fix the environment, and nothing ever changes. And one industry gets in the way of environmental progress. And you know, Congresswoman Graham, I have to disagree with one thing you just said because it wasn't true. You have taken money from the sugar industry. You took thousands and thousands of dollars from the sugar industry, and that's just a policy difference I have with you. And then on the eve of our very first debate, you gave that money back. Because what we have to do as Democrats is we have to recognize that for us to change the future of Florida's environment and end these toxic discharges once and for all, we have to have the courage to stand up the forces that are coming up with the best arguments not to do these things, not to make these changes, not to build the reservoir, not to regulate the lands north of the lake. And until we do that, nothing is going to change.
Now, I think for the rules, I gave the $17,000 that I had received previously to the Indian River Lagoon Riverkeeper. So I am really proud that the sugar money is now being used to clean up the mess that they created.
Our next question tonight goes to Mr. Gillum. We'll ask all of you this question as well. There's supposed to be school safety officers in place in August in every school, but it's an unfunded mandate. A lot of places don't have the money. If you're governor, where does that money come from?
Yeah, I have to tell you, I think the legislature and the governor was half-hearted in their solution to addressing gun violence and the way gun violence shows up in our communities. Instead of arming teachers with more salaries, instead of arming them with more supplies in the classroom, instead of arming them with more training and support, they've talked about arming them with weapons. Now, already we ask these teachers who are already doing the most difficult job that exists on earth, the making, the shaping, the molding, the inspiring of the minds of our most precious gifts, our children. And now we want them to be not just the teacher, but the social worker, the dean of students, the security guard. We have an obligation here to keep our kids safe. No parent wants to send their kid away from school worried about whether or not they'll have to pick them up in a body bag. That's not who we are. And that's why I took on the NRA and got sued by them for over 2 years. When I'm elected governor, we're going to take it to them. And we're going to adopt the kind of common sense laws that put people before guns.
Mr. Green.
When kids go to school in Florida, they have to feel safe. But they also have to feel safe in their neighborhoods.
everyone asks, how are we going to pay for this? You know, the problem with Florida today is, you know, I don't know, I learned a little bit about education. Prior to third grade, kids learned to read. After third grade, kids read to learn. Well, you know that right now, only 56% of Florida third graders are at the third grade reading level. So we need to spend money on a lot more than school safety. We need to do what New Jersey did when they took their schools from 36 in the country to 2 in the country. We are 40 in the country right now, according to U.S. News and World Report. So how are we going to pay for it? So let me tell you something they did. 2 years of mandatory of pre-K. For every 3- and 4-year-old gets real pre-K. Not the voluntary pre-K that's a few hours a day of babysitting, but real pre-K. How are we going to pay for this? I'll tell you very quickly. Right now, there's a statistic. We spend, how much we spend as a percentage of our economy on education, we are 38th in the country. You know what? Because it has not been a priority for 20 years of Republican governors. When I'm governor, that will be a priority, and we'll have plenty of money for safety and for educating our kids.
Mr. Levine.
Great. Well, first of all, let me actually answer the question, because I can assure every one of us on this stage, if any of us become the Democratic nominee for governor, this is going to be the big question that the Republicans are going to ask us, okay? So number one, we're going to have a combined earnings reporting system where no longer can companies in Florida take their earnings and actually divert it to zero-income states like Delaware. That'll bring us hundreds of millions of dollars. Number two, we're going to stop giving away corporate incentives because you can't bribe your way into becoming a 21st century economy. Number three, we're going to stop with corporate tax loopholes because we are a low-tax state and we should stay a low-tax state. We're going to make sure that we take that money from charter schools and put it into our public schools. We're going to make sure that we have proper impact fees. We're going to make sure we stop shaking down the Seminoles and shake hands with them and take that hundreds of millions of dollars and bring it to our schools. We're going to make sure we have sports betting so we don't lose that money. Keep it in the state of Florida. And we're going to expand Medicaid. If we expand Medicaid, right away, we will save $500 million. And I could go on and on and on. Thank you.
Ms. Graham.
Was the question about guns?
It was. The question was about school safety officers, supposed to be here in August, an unfunded mandate. Yeah. So if you're governor, where does that money come from?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, as someone who has worked in the public schools, I have seen this legislature provide unfunded mandates over and over and over again. And the hypocrisy after what happened on February 14th at Stoneman Douglas High School for them to do this yet again, what the gun lobby wanted was to arm our instructional personnel. I was at the school district when I was working in Leon County School District when Sandy Hook happened. And that was when I first started getting calls from teachers saying, please, Gwen, please, I do not want to have a gun. I am here to teach. So what we're going to do is we're going to make sure that we provide security in the way that it should be, which is with school resource officers. But I'm going to do more than that. I am tired of words. I am ready for action. I have already developed an executive order that allows the governor, whoever she is, to sign an executive order banning the sale of military-style assault weapons. It's one of the first things I'm going to do. And you know what? I've heard I'm going to be sued by the NRA. They already spent $300,000 against me in 2014 to try to beat me when I ran for Congress. I beat them. I will beat them again. And if they sue me, I say, bring it on.
Mr. King.
One of my new friends in this campaign is Latasha Hobbs. Latasha is from Jacksonville. She lost her son, Maurice, just about 2 years ago, just after he had turned 18 years old. A young African-American man, another victim of this epic of gun violence throughout the country and throughout our state. You know, since the beginning of my campaign, I have said I want to invest and support the big ideas that are going to change this once and for all and fund and support it. And so we came out with what has been called the most ambitious gun policy in Florida, what some people call a bullet tax, but what I call the Every Kid Fund for Gun Violence Prevention, which would take tax sales revenues from guns and from ammunition and add a new safety fee and create an ongoing revenue source to invest in the best school safety programs, the best infrastructure, the best technology, the best ideas on the planet to protect the future of our children.
Our next question is for Mr. Green. You are in Lee County, one of the fastest growing public school districts in the state, growing an average of about 2,000 students every year. It doesn't have the funding to keep up with that demand and wants to increase taxes. On top of that, It has to share its capital dollars with charter schools. What will you do to better fund public schools?
Well, first of all, when I am governor, not a penny of public school money will be spent on private schools or charter schools, which are all just schools without rules. We have a tremendous education problem in this state. We are not taking care of our children. When I look at the statistics, you know, right now, if you look at a child in the fourth grade here in Florida, you know that fourth graders in public schools in Florida, only 48% are at the fourth grade math. By the eighth grade, it's only 29%. You know where it is by the 12th grade? Only 19% of Florida seniors in high school are doing 12th grade math. And in reading, it's almost just as bad. 35% of our seniors are reading at the 12th grade level. So you know what? This is not a problem. This is an emergency. We are ruining these children's lives. How are these kids going to compete with kids all over Florida, all over the country, all over the world in a global economy when they're graduating at these levels? So every single penny for public education will be used for public education. And I can tell you, we will get our schools back to top five in the country by the time I'm done being governor.
Next question is from Mr. Levine. Our emergency rooms here in this area are packed with sick patients, especially in the winter in season. We have overcrowding in our hospitals. We have it every year over and over again. As governor, what would you do to ensure that more beds are approved at the state level to provide adequate health care for people who live here?
Right. Well, the first thing we have to do, and we're going to make sure, we do the opposite of what Governor Scott did. Governor Scott turned his back on Floridians. He turned his back on hospitals by not accepting Medicaid expansion money. If I'm honored to be governor, we're not only going to accept it, we're going to demand as much as possible to ensure as many Floridians as we possibly can. That's number one. All right. Number two, the one thing I've learned is no matter where we go, no matter who we talk to, no one has a great model of what really works. Yes, we can expand Medicaid, and that's what we all plan to do to ensure more people. But we need to assemble the best and the brightest in the state of Florida. I mean the doctors, I mean patients, nurses, hospital administrators. We need to make sure we bring the health insurance companies in this, and we need to have a blue ribbon panel, all of us together, to come up with some innovative ideas of how to make Florida the model in delivering health care. Because the one thing I'm sure of, there is nowhere in the country right now that really has it right. Why can't Florida be a leader? And if I'm governor, we're going to do everything we can to become one. Thank you.
Our next question is for Ms. Graham. Southwest Florida is growing fast. Our traffic is getting worse year-round, and the rents are sky high. If you were elected governor, what would you do to manage that growth?
Well, all of these issues that you just referred to are quality of life issues, and they're issues that, sadly, after 20 years of Republican rule, we are where we are, where people are not put first and foremost in all the decisions that are being made in Tallahassee. When I'm governor, I will wake up every day thinking about how do I make the lives of the people who live in this state better. So we need to have affordable housing. This is something that we see all across the state of Florida. The fact that this legislature over and over again has swept the Sadowski Trust and not provided the resources to help communities build affordable housing for people all across the state of Florida is yet another appalling example of the failure in Tallahassee. In terms of growth, and we see it everywhere, yes, I have sat in traffic today. Who hasn't? We have not invested in our infrastructure. One of the things as a former member of Congress that I will be able to do, and I will do, is I will wear my Team Florida T-shirt to Washington, D.C., and demand that we have the resources that we are entitled to as the third largest state in the country to address our infrastructure needs.
Mr. King, we're still recovering from Hurricane Irma here. It's been very lengthy and very costly, especially for people in certain areas. What would you do to help people who are struggling after a major hurricane, especially those folks who seem to struggle with their insurance companies and still are after Irma to get their claims settled?
Absolutely. So this is a problem all across Florida, not unique to Southwest Florida. And it's the concept of having a governor and a government that is a champion for consumer protection. That is looking out for folks who are not getting a fair deal from their insurance companies. You know, insurance companies, by and large, the bargain we make with them is that when things go bad, when that storm hits, they're there to protect us and to care for us so that our family can go on. And you better believe I will be a governor who will be looking out for the consumers of Florida, not just when it comes to housing issues, which are critically important in Southwest Florida because we have an affordable housing crisis here, and the hurricane only exacerbated that, but when it comes to insurance, access to affordable insurance, and care for and protection of families that have been burned by fraud or bad products in the midst of their crisis.
The next question is for Mr. Gillum. The Florida Department of Citrus recently reported citrus production in Florida could drop by as much as 82% by 2026, largely due to citrus greening. Now tariffs could also come into play. How would you save Florida's citrus industry and make it grow again?
Well, I'll tell you, the first thing that we ought to do is demand that our agricultural commissioner, who seems to be so close to President Donald Trump, would actually demand of his friend that he get rid of these ridiculous tariffs, which are causing major trouble between our allies all across the globe. Now, I've said Donald Trump is uniquely unqualified for the office that he holds. But since he's there, certainly the Republicans ought to leverage their power to get him to do right by the state of Florida. Now, the truth is that agriculture is an important part of this state, as is tourism. But we've got to start to look around and establish a North Star for the future economy of this state. Yes, we ought to go to Washington and advocate for the resources that we need to ensure that we can prop up this ag industry. But we also have to make sure that we're doing innovative things like I've done in Tallahassee. We received the tech hire designation during the Obama administration for the work that we're doing to train and retrain people on technology-related jobs, both high and low tech, so that they can walk into this future economy, get a good job, a good wage, a good set of health care, and a good retirement. We got to think about the future of Florida's economy as a part of this answer.
Mr. Green. Voters legalized medical marijuana here nearly 2 years ago, but the access has still been extremely limited, especially in this area. So how would you clear the way for the industry, and do you favor legalized recreational marijuana?
You know, the people of Florida voted to have medical marijuana. I mean, think about the people that need medical marijuana to treat their pain. These are people that have the worst types of cancer, the most dreaded diseases, AIDS victims. And, you know, we are depriving them of getting this treatment because Rick Scott decides they can't smoke it. That is ridiculous. The day that I'm governor, medical marijuana will be available to every single person who needs it. As far as legalized marijuana, I have a little nuanced view. You know, I'm the father of three young boys. They're 4, 6, and 8 years old. And I kind of imagine, you know, what would it be like 5 years from now if my oldest son, who would be 13 years old, going over to his friend's house and there's a marijuana cigarette, pack of cigarettes on the table, is he going to be more likely to smoke marijuana? So here's the good news. Other states have already legalized marijuana. So what I'd like to do as governor is let's see what's happened in states like Colorado. If consumption has increased among young people in places like this, I'd say let's definitely decriminalize it, but don't legalize it. If it hasn't, I'd say legalize it, regulate it, tax it, and that'll be the end of the story for good.
Our next question is for Mr. Levine. You're in a largely conservative district here tonight. What makes you think that you can carry this area and win?
I'll tell you why. I think because I'm somebody that has lived the American dream. I started from nothing. I took a job on a cruise ship. With $500, I built a business, and I became wildly more successful I ever thought possible. I sold that business, and then I became a two-term mayor who didn't talk a lot. I got a lot done. And I think that what people are looking for, not only in our state and our country, is they're looking for people that don't talk about what they're going to do, actually get things done. And as somebody that brings both success in the private sector and success in the public sector, I think I'm uniquely have ability to cross over to Republicans, to Democrats, and to independents. I think the one thing we do know today is we don't want to elect someone just necessarily from the private sector who's never been tested in the public sector, okay? And I think we could all agree with that. Thank you so much.
Ms. Graham, we have a lot of businesses in our area that rely on immigration for employees. What would you do as governor to give those folks a legal path to citizenship for those workers who are the lifeblood of two of our top industries here, tourism and agriculture?
Well, as you know, immigration is a federal issue, and it's something that I'm very disappointed in Congress, that Congress has not developed a comprehensive immigration reform plan because we desperately need it. But I can tell you what we're not going to do here in Florida. We're not going to be a state like Rick Scott has wanted to establish and Donald Trump wants to establish for our country that's not welcoming and recognizing the great addition that all those who have moved here from other places in the world provide to the state of Florida. I am the granddaughter of a Syrian-Lebanese immigrant, and I would not be here today but for the welcoming nature of our country. So when I'm governor, we're going to welcome all to the state of Florida, support them, and work towards a process where they do not have to live in fear, because those who are here are living in the shadows, and I want people to be able to come out from the shadows and be able to live their life fully here in Florida.
Mr. King, given the current flux of the Affordable Care Act and Florida's decision not to accept the Medicaid expansion, what would the state's role in health care be with you as governor?
So tomorrow, good timing to ask this question, I will begin a 12-day tour going all across the state of Florida, rolling out our next big idea of this campaign, what I call universal participation, or keeping the promise with Florida's seniors and children and the folks in working families that don't have access to health care. The problem is pretty simple. We have 2.5 million people across the state of Florida that don't have access to a doctor who knows their name. Rick Scott said no to Medicaid expansion, even when the faith community and the business community and many Republicans in the Senate had lined up to pass it. And so it first starts with this pledge that as governor, I will do everything in my power to pass Medicaid expansion legislatively. And if I can't do that, I will take it to the ballot in 2020 and work to pass it just like the state of Maine did. And then we will work to strengthen the exchanges. So those folks in Southwest Florida who are having access and affordability problems with health care will have more choices.
Mr. Gillum, voters will get a say in whether or not the homestead exemption increases. Is that a good idea to increase it to $75,000? And if not, why shouldn't folks get to keep more of their tax money?
Yeah, I have to answer this question in my hat as a mayor and now 15 years as an elected official at the local level. First of all, I encourage everyone to look under the nuance of this constitutional amendment. This is a bad deal. One, everyone does not get to benefit from the increase, expanded homestead exemption. Two, you have a homestead exemption that might result in a couple of dollars of saving, but think of what it will do to our school districts across the state of Florida. Already underfunded school districts that right now will see more and more seepage away from being able to ensure an opportunity to learn for all of our kids. Think of safety and security. In my city, where I am mayor, our ad valorem taxes don't even cover enough to take care of our police department alone. That's before you get to parks and recreation and all of those other things. So I would encourage you, we live in a society, a collective, a belief that all of us do good when we do good. And why would we take money out of the system to starve the public process of the needed resources it needs for all of us to live a strong and healthy quality of life? It's a bad idea.
Mr. Green, if elected, you would take office under a Republican president. What would you do to work with President Trump to better the state of Florida?
Well, you asked the right guy. I mean, I've been fighting with Donald Trump since as long as I've known him. I mean, anybody here can look online and see what I did the day before the election when I went on NBC. And they asked, I gave a big push for Hillary Clinton and said all these wonderful things about her. And they asked about Donald Trump. I said, I know Donald Trump, and I can tell you, I'd be scared to death to have him as my president. I had no idea how right I would be. It has been a nightmare, and we are going to have to stand up to Donald Trump because you know what? I mean, as a Florida governor, am I going to stand by when Donald Trump rips children from mom's arms when they're struggling to get into America? Am I going to allow Donald Trump to undermine our whole national identity with what he did with Putin this week? I mean, he's nothing but a traitor. So I can promise you, I've stood up with him before. I will stand up with him as governor, stronger than anyone you can imagine.
Mr. Levine, same question for you. How would you work with President Trump to better the state of Florida?
Well, for about a year and a half of my life, I was out there working for Secretary Clinton to elect the first president, female president of the United States of America. I was able to donate to her, raise funds for her, and became her probably number one top surrogate on television. Matter of fact, I think I'm the only Democrat that would go on Fox. I'd wear my Kevlar vest, and I would take the bullets, and I did it. You know, I warned everybody that this guy is the best deal he ever did in business was being born, okay? And we understand what we got today, and we're living a national nightmare. But I think what's more important than that are two things. This race for governor is not only the most important race in our country, it's the most important race in the world. Because so goes this governor's race, so goes the presidency in 2020, folks. Okay? That's how important this race is going to be. And let me tell you another race that's even that much more important is the Senate race. And we need to reelect Bill Nelson to the United States Senate. Okay?
Ms. Graham.
Thank you.
Same question for you.
First, I'd like to say that I want to discuss briefly my health care plan, because I put out a full health care proposal a couple weeks ago where we're going to take Medicaid expansion, we're going to provide a public option so that anyone in the state of Florida can buy into the same type of insurance that any Florida legislator gets. It's going to drive down costs, provide better access. We're going to do a reinsurance market so that we can drive down the cost of those policies for the most high-risk patients. And I'm going to start taking care of our seniors again. We have abandoned the most vulnerable here in the state of Florida. And I'm going to make sure that our seniors are cared for. And that's a wonderful segue into Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump does not understand anybody who wants to work with him. He understands strength. And my strength is going to be that I'm going to be fighting for the people of Florida every single day. And I'm not going to put up with anything that Donald Trump does that in any way limits every single Floridian's opportunity to have the best life here in the state of Florida and a quality of life here in the state of Florida that we all deserve.
Mr. King, same question to you.
I think first we have to win the contest of ideas. You know, part about defeating Donald Trump or standing up to Donald Trump is being able to cast a vision for the people of Florida, many of which voted and loved Donald Trump, on why we can serve them better, on why we can serve them with excellence. Secondly, I think when he does what he does, when he says the awful things he says, we have to stand with boldness and courage. You know, when he said what he did about those who immigrate from Haiti or from African countries, that very day I was in Little Haiti, surrounded by Haitian business leaders. And that night from South Florida, I said that what he said today from the Oval Office was not just wrong and cruel, it was un-American. And as the governor of Florida, I would speak up every chance I get. What we don't like in Donald Trump and what we can't tolerate in our party or theirs is the bully mentality. Somebody who seeks to, through force of character and the nature and the way they talk, talk down to us. We can't allow that in our party, and we certainly can't allow him to get away with it.
Mr. Gillum, same question to you.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I'm not sure what I can do much to work with Donald Trump other than try to wrestle away that BlackBerry or whatever device he is tweeting so actively on. Honestly, the man is a danger to himself and, more importantly, to the nation and the world. But I will tell you, if the president wanted to send us infrastructure money, just as Obama tried to send us money to build high-speed rail across the I-4 corridor, we take it, we put people to work, and we build a 21st century transportation system that benefits the people of Florida. If Donald Trump came to his senses and decided that he wanted to make sure that we will get access to Medicaid expansion in this state, we take that money because our refusal has cost us $6 billion in last year's budget alone. And now we got people in this state who are terrified of getting sick because if they get sick, they can't go to work. And if they can't go to work, they can't earn a wage. And if they can't earn a wage, they cannot pay their bills. And when they cannot pay their bills, something gets turned off. Right? That's the lived experience of people in this state. So while Donald Trump is a distraction, the governor of the state of Florida has to go to work for the people of the state of Florida.
Mr. Green, where does Florida waste the most money? Where does the government waste the most money?
Whoa. I mean, I'd have to probably say corporate welfare. I mean, you know, we are just giving away money left and right to corporate wealth. The other thing is we're taking money from our public school budgets, which are so starved for money. You know, we only spend $7,500 per student in Florida. That's a third almost of what they're spending in Massachusetts. On pre-K, which is so vital to a child's development, we're spending $2,400 a year. Can anyone in this audience imagine running a pre-K and only having $2,400 a year to educate a child? So we're going to stop taking money from public school budgets and using it to pay for charter schools and private schools. We're going to stop corporate welfare, which is doing no good at all, but instead we're going to build an economy that really attracts people by having a world-class education system, by having health care for all Floridians, and having guns under control so people want to come here and open businesses without needing those corporate welfare checks.
Mr. Levine, you are sitting in a room with a number of Democrats who are supportive of the candidates who are on the stage. However, there are a lot of Floridians who do not exercise the right to vote. What would you do to inspire the electorate?
Well, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to make sure that those folks that have committed a crime in their life are given the opportunity after pay their price to society to vote again. That's number one, okay? We're going to make sure that happens. If I'm honored to be governor, whether it passes or it doesn't pass this Amendment 4, I'm going to make sure we get it done because it's the right thing to do. But I think most important what we need to do, and we need to do as Democrats, is not put ourselves in a circular firing squad, because that's what the Republicans want us to do. Every one of these candidates up here have great ideas. They have great journeys in their background. I admire every single one of them for having the guts and the strength and the stamina to go through a campaign and come up here and answer these questions, because truly, I honestly believe in my heart, everyone on this stage wants to do the right thing and they want to help the state of Florida. And I believe that in my heart. Okay? So I think what we need to do is inspire the people by inspiring each other and building each other up, not tearing each other down. Thank you.
Ms. Graham, what do you say to someone who's never voted Democratic before but is watching this tonight thinking, maybe I will this time?
I say yes, vote Democratic, because we will make a difference in your lives. I actually am the one candidate up on the stage who has beaten a Republican. I won in 2014 in a Republican district and a Republican wave year. Remember 2014? Not exactly a great year for Democrats. And what I did in Congress was build the relationships that allowed me to be able to talk to other members of the House of Representatives, regardless of which party they're in. That's what we've got to get back to. The reason we should vote for a Democrat and vote for me this time is because I have the ability to bring people together. There is way too much chaos in our politics. I think we can all agree on that. There's so much divisiveness. There's so much negativity. That's not how you get things done. You get things done by building relationships, having the smartest, brightest ideas on how you move Florida forward, and then working together, not ever accepting no as an answer, finding a way to work together to make a difference in people's lives. That's why you should vote for me as the next governor of Florida.
Mr. King, how important is political experience to survive in today's political world?
Well, I certainly think it's one element of being qualified for this job. I think there are many. But, you know, I would answer the question a little bit differently that you just asked Gwen in answering this. And that's the fact that Democrats, to turn people out and to win, because remember, we haven't won this election since 1994. I was a freshman in high school the last time we won. We've lost 21 of 25 statewide elections since 2000. And I would argue we have lost because we have forgotten that we are the party of big dreams. This was a party built to do big things, to take on hard challenges. We turn people out. We excite and inspire them when we're willing to give them something different, when we're willing to take on the sugar industry because we are so tired of these toxic discharges, when we're willing to take on the NRA with bold new proposals like the bullet tax. That's what gets people excited, because even if they disagree with us on the policy, they know we're people of integrity that are doing the very best we can.
Time certainly flies. We're at closing statements now. Wow. We'll start with Mr. Gillum.
Wow.
Oh, how about that? I don't get to make the case as to why I would be. No, I'm messing with you. The time does fly indeed. You all, I am extremely honored by this opportunity, but I have to tell you, I'm sick of losing. It's time for Democrats to win again. And the way that we're going to win again is by giving voters a reason to go out and vote for something and not just against. Now, one of these things is not like the other. I am the only non-millionaire running for governor. Well, non-billionaire and non-millionaire in this race. But that's okay. We're going to win this race by reflecting the values of everyday people. August 28th is going to be a big day. August 28, 1963, Dr. Martin Luther King stood in Washington, D.C. and delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech. August 28, 2018, Barack Obama stood in Invesco Field and accepted the Democratic nomination for President of the United States. And if you do your job and help to elect me on August 28, 2018, I will be nominated, the Democratic nominee for governor. We're going to flip this state in 2018, November, and we're going to flip this country in 2020. My name is Andrew Gillum, and I look forward to being the next governor of the state of Florida. Thank you.
Mr. Green.
First of all, I have to say goodnight to my 4, 6, and 8-year-old boys, Malcolm, Brandon, and Cameron. Please get to bed. I know you've enjoyed this debate. Look, what we've all seen tonight from this debate is we're in a state of emergency in Florida. Our schools are 40th in the country. Our health care is 48th in the country. You know, think about Lake Okeechobee. It's choking on toxic green algae. We have a lot of work to do. And you know what? This election is one big job interview. The people of Florida, all of you, have to pick someone who you think will be the CEO of a trillion-dollar economy. And I am the person that you need to have. I can tell you, we've had great ideas for 20 years. We've had great candidates for 20 years. The problem is we haven't had anyone who can get the message out and to fight these Republicans dollar for dollar, toe for toe for toe. I am committed to do that. I will put up and spend my own money to get out there and fight these Republicans, and I will back up the down ticket races so we'll turn Florida blue, not just in the governor's race, but the Senate race and in the House races. I'm Jeff Green, and I want to be a governor.
Mr. Levine.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here. As a two-term mayor, we got a lot done. I'm not somebody that just talks about things. I actually get them done. When we talked about minimum living wage in Miami Beach, we passed minimum living wage so people could live. Unfortunately, our governor stopped us, and that's why I'm running for governor. Okay? On Miami Beach, we didn't talk about sea level rise and climate change. We became a leader and a poster child for fighting back against sea level rise. In Miami Beach, we didn't just talk about police reform. We actually reformed a police department. We didn't talk about what we could do for the LGBTQ community. In Miami Beach, as mayor, we had the highest LGBTQ scores from the Human Rights Commission in the history of the state of Florida. Folks, on Miami Beach, as a mayor, we did a lot. But I think what's important today is not about necessarily what you tell everyone you're going to do. I say to you and I say to the people in Florida, look what someone has done. Make your decision based on their track record. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Philip Levine. I'm running for governor. I'd be honored to have your vote to be the Democratic nominee. Thank you.
Ms. Graham.
I started out this debate by stating that this is not a drill. This is the future of Florida that's on the line. All of the issues we discussed here, they are so critical that we get back on the right path, reverse course for the people of Florida and the state of Florida. I am ready to do that. As I said, I am the one candidate on this stage who has won in a red area in a Republican wave year. And we will win again on November 6, 2018. People ask me all the time, why are you running for governor? I'll tell you why I'm running. I'm running to do the hard work. And this is going to be hard. This is going to be very hard. But I will wake up every day with a team that I will have assembled of the brightest and the smartest people across the state of Florida who are, every single one of us, are committed to the people of Florida. I'm committed to you. And I would be honored to have your support.
Mr. King.
Florida needs a change. And the change we need is more than just replacing one Republican with one Democrat. We have to win and be transformative. You know, conventional politics in this state says you don't take on Big Sugar, doesn't pay. I did. Conventional politics says we cower to the NRA. I proposed an assault weapons ban and a bullet tax. Conventional politics hasn't said anything about affordable housing or free community college and trade school. I've made them cornerstones of my campaign. For 11 days in May, I traveled all across Florida, unveiling an ambitious criminal justice plan that would reduce mass incarceration of nonviolent offenders by 50%, that would end private prisons and the death penalty, legalize and tax marijuana, and dismantle the school-to-prison pipeline. If you want the status quo, I'm not your guy. But if you want to swing for the fences and dream again, I'm Chris King, and I'm ready to be your governor. Thank you.
The audience has been very good, so we would like to thank everybody for being here, all of the candidates. A big round of applause.
And we want to thank Florida Gulf Coast University for hosting us tonight. The Florida primary is just 6 weeks away on August 28th.
Trust Week News for comprehensive coverage from now through the primary and into the November general election. One of these five candidates will face off with a Republican nominee. Good night from FGCU.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
You've been listening to audio from last night's debate of the Democratic candidates vying to be Florida's next governor, held at Florida Gulf Coast University. The candidates will hold their fifth and final debate before the August 28th primary election on August 2nd in Miami. Today's show was produced by myself. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.